on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Thursday, September 25th, 2025, which means we only have 3 trading days left in the month of September. And before you know it, October is going to be around the corner, Halloween, Thanksgiving, all of the holidays, no matter what you celebrate, around the corner. And then 2026 is quickly upon us. And that's why we say that each and every day, it is critical to not lose focus. Our job, as I see it, is to help you understand what is going on in the world around you so that you can become a better and more informed investor. Now, in order to do that, we meet here at InvestTalk each and every day, 5 days a week, and we go through various topics, various stories, some warnings, some advice. But the most important part of this show are the finance and investment questions that you submit via voicemail, over on our YouTube, or live throughout the show. Now, before we run down today's show topics, before we talk about today's market performance, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey, InvestTalk. Just had a question about a stock, Tilray Brands, T-L-R-Y. Just wanted to know your thoughts on it. I noticed that its revenue was going up a little bit and the profits coming in on October 9th. So I just wanted to see what you guys thought about it. Appreciate the show. Bye.
Tilray Brands, ticker T-L-R-Y, is a global cannabis consumer goods company. They operate within the traditional cannabis space, the wellness space. They do beverages, and they do various consumer products. So they cultivate, they process, they distribute medical and recreational marijuana. And they've been pushing these differentiated premium segments, their small batch, their craft cannabis, to try and distinguish themselves outside of the crowd of many of these cannabis companies. Now, like I said, they have a beverage and spirit segment, the Breckenridge Distillery, that has made a bit of moves and led to some growth in this business. And recently they weren't trading, they weren't trading on the NASDAQ, they were trading over the counter. The reason being is that there was actually pricing requirements to be on exchange, and they were below that threshold. They were below $1 for some time. They were trading OTC. Now it looks like they might be back on the NASDAQ as of August. And the company's expanding. They're expanding in the United States. They're expanding in Europe. Geographically speaking, 25.9% of their business is in Canada. 39% is in Europe, Middle East, and Asia, or rather in Africa. And 33.3% in the United States. They have been growing from a revenue perspective as well, up from $167 million, sometimes it's hard to speak, in May 2020 to about $821 million in May 2025. Growth has been slowing over the past year. They aren't keeping up that 37.5% annualized growth rate. Interestingly enough, pandemic is when they really had that explosive growth from May of 2020 into 2021, from $167 million to $513 million. But they still haven't made any money. Their net margins are negative. Their EBITDA margin is projected to be positive, but has been positive since 2024 and been expanding. They're moving closer to the territory of being a company that makes money, but this is still a highly regulated space, one that is open to a lot of legislative changes, a lot of regulatory risk. And, you know, typically you see diversification as being a benefit to a lot of companies, but given that they now touch, and they have touched, many different governments, it becomes a little bit complex there. This is a name that has fallen off dramatically since it IPO'd in July of 2018. It was trading at over $100 a share back in 2019. Now it's trading $1.19 per share. So, you know, great that they're growing. Good for them that they are back trading on exchange. But frankly, this company doesn't make much money. There's a lot of risks out there. And so as a long-term investment, I don't think this is the way to go. That is Tilray Brands, ticker TLRY. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. So here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic. What is a blue chip stock? A blue chip stock is a share in a large, financially stable company with a long track record of reliable performance and often consistent dividends. So we'll dive into how to identify these names and how they can potentially benefit your portfolios. We also have a couple of other things we're going to talk about, including how the auto industry is showing a bit of a warning sign on overall U.S. economic activity. Also touch on electricity prices and why higher prices might not necessarily be good for utility returns. And should we have time at the end of the show, we will touch on a story about life cycle investing. No, we're going to touch on how different generations think about investing. We also have some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on Franklin Bitcoin ETF, ticker EZBC, and another on Everest Group, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're going to a new break. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, call now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. They'll be talking about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com. There's value in every InvestTalk podcast, so call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Have you ever had a breakthrough moment working on something that wouldn't let you stop thinking until you got to the bottom of it? I bet you've experienced that situation more than once. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Think comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone. Financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. Claude.ai/invest.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks finishing lower yet again, though ending off of their worst levels. S&P 500 and NASDAQ now down for three consecutive sessions. The Dow down 38 basis points on the day S&P 500 down 50, NASDAQ down 50, Russell 2000 down 98. One of the big drivers downward, big tech, mostly lower across the board. Tesla, the notable decliner out of that group. Other underperformers included, looks like apparel names, chemicals, airlines, food, biotech, home builders, and software. Not a lot of green in the market today, but relative outperformers included integrated energy, E&Ps, refiners, rails, and custody banks. On the bond side, treasuries were a bit weaker, the curve flattening a little, yields up 5 to 6 basis points. The short end being the area of most movement. Dollar index up 60 basis points after jumping 70 the day before. Gold finished up 10 basis points. And crude oil, after all the activity in the day, pretty little change by the time settlement came through. Now, the path of least resistance did seem to be a bit lower today. It's what we've seen over the past couple sessions. Rates still an overhang on sentiment as the market is dialing back some of its near-term easing expectations, something we've been talking about for a while, something that should not surprise you. Thursday's macro data, the latest driver, particularly with another notable decline in initial claims, and also Fed speak, right? Outside of Moran, the newest addition to the newest Fed governor. Generally speaking, Fed governors have highlighted a preference for a more cautious approach to easing. On the data side, headline August durable good orders were up 2.9% month to month versus the consensus for down 50 basis points. Core orders up 60 basis points versus the forecast of being down 30. Weekly initial jobless claims printed at 218,000, better than the consensus and down from a prior 232,000. Continuing claims also lower than feared. In addition, we got a red hot final Q2 GDP number revised up to 3.8% versus the expectation, which was a hold steady at 3.3%. The release noting lower imports, of course, a lot of front loading in Q1 and stronger consumer spending. August existing home sales stronger than consensus as well, follows yesterday's very strong new homes reading. August wholesale inventories down 20 basis points month over month versus the expectation for a 10 basis point increase. Looking ahead, personal income and spending report, the highlight on Friday with the focus on PCE inflation. Core PCE inflation seen up 20 basis points month over month in August, leaving the year over year rate of growth unchanged at 2.9%. So it could be interesting to see what the data says versus the consensus. We'll also get the final University of Michigan consumer sentiment report for September, and that will round out our week tomorrow. All right, let's get back to the questions at hand. This one from our YouTube comment section from Randy Ramos, and it's a question on ticker CNEQ. It says, love the episode regarding how sometimes diversification may lead to diluting returns. Would like to hear your opinion on the ETF CNEQ. It's an ETF that only holds 30 positions, so it seems like a great way to concentrate into high quality names. Well, CNEQ is an actively managed fund. It invests in large cap companies in the US that have promising growth potential. At least 25% of the total assets go into related industries like software, technology, hardware, semiconductors, IT services. May invest more than 25% of total assets in that single industry if it chooses to do so. So a pretty actively managed fund. $145 million is its asset, so it's a pretty small fund. Looks like it hasn't been around for that long. It launched in April of 2024. But in the 1 year-ish that it's been around, the 1 year it's returned 51.3% from a price perspective. Relative to the MSCI USA Large Cap Growth Index, 27.27 is the return there. Since inception, 45.35 versus 27.90. It holds 31 names. Why has it done so well? Well, its two biggest holdings are NVIDIA and Microsoft. Top 10 rounded out by Amazon, Meta, AppLovin, Talon, GFL, Constellation, Nebius, and Tesla. So 26% of this portfolio is NVIDIA and Microsoft. That's a pretty big grouping for the top holdings and have been really the primary drivers of performance. So what we talked about yesterday is how the dangers of over-diversifying, that sometimes it can be costly and it can lead to lower expected returns, especially if you're investing in companies that have similar correlations. You don't get the diversification benefit if you're buying two stocks that will perform the same way in different market environments. Now, this here seems to be a fund that tilts towards some of the most popular names, specifically in tech. Looks like they do have a couple energy names in their top 10 as well, but this is kind of going the opposite way. If you want to have a small allocation towards this, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, it invests in U.S. large caps and it's charging you 55 basis points in its expense ratio, which to me is pretty expensive for a large cap fund. But I think that if you put a large portion of your asset base in this, you run the risk of being too heavily concentrated in names that are primarily being driven right now by the same growth theme. Even the energy name in the top 10 has benefited greatly from the demand for energy associated with AI. So yes, listen to the show yesterday if you didn't already. We talked about all the reasons why it can be disadvantageous to over-diversify, but that doesn't mean that you should throw all your money in a bag with names that are very, very similar. That is CNEQ USA, the Alger Concentrated, they say it right there, Concentrated Equity ETF. Now it's coming up. Before you know it, it will be September 30th. And on September 30th, not only is it my mom's birthday, but it's also the day that we will be doing our latest InvestTalk Wealth webinar. This webinar will be about AI as a growth theme, not just the names that you've heard of, not the NVIDIAs, the Microsofts, not the tech names that we're going to be focusing on, but the other names that stand to benefit, the picks and shovels, the energy base, the industrial base, the companies that will benefit from the implementation of what these tech names are building. So if you join us, our goal is for you to see through the headlines, see through what has been spoken about far too much, dive deeper and see where investors can benefit across industries. If that's interesting, that goes off on September 30th, but you do have to sign up. Space is limited. Head over to investtalk.com. Scroll down till you see the Wealth Webinar sign up. Justin and I can't wait to see you there. We're moving into breaks. Still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
My main focus point today concerns this topic. What is a blue chip stock? Now, blue chip stocks come from large, financially strong companies with long track records of performance and household recognition. Names like IBM and Microsoft, American Express, McDonald's, Boeing, all of these are classic examples of blue chip stocks. What these companies have in common is they tend to be prized for reliability, for consistent earnings, for investor cash flows in the form of share buybacks and dividends, and they become anchor holdings in many portfolios for all of these reasons. Most are components of major indices like the Dow, the S&P 500, Russell indices as well. And that helps to reinforce their stability, but also their reputation. When people talk about the market moving, for better or for worse, they tend to be talking about the S&P 500. And so if your company that we're talking about is in there, that means that it is valued with respect to the U.S. economy. A common benchmark for, quote, blue chip status is usually something that trades above $10 billion in market cap, though true sector leaders of smaller size can qualify as well. Now, dividends are not mandatory to be a blue chip stock, but most blue chips boast long histories of stable or growing payouts. Coca-Cola has paid dividends since 1893. Now, the name blue chip comes from, you guessed it, poker, where blue chips hold the highest value at the table. Investors see them as safe, though history shows they can still stumble. GM and Lehman were once considered blue chip stocks. GM is considered a blue chip stock now, but Lehman Brothers certainly is not around anymore after the collapse in 2008. Blue chips help provide balance in portfolios. They blend growth and stability to offset some of the market volatility over time. They're solid core holdings, but shouldn't really be your entire portfolio position. Diversification with mid caps, with small caps, with bonds, with cash. We know historically mid and small caps tend to outperform their large cap peers over longer periods of time. Why is that? Because investors demand higher expected returns for taking on that excess level of risk. So having them as part of your portfolio along these anchor points, these blue chip stocks, can certainly be of benefit to you. Access is easy. Investors can buy individual shares, mutual funds, ETFs, the track indices like the Dow and the S&P 500 to provide this type of exposure. And certainly it should be a part of any investor's portfolio. Bottom line, blue chips are industry titans with enviable stability, but they're not invincible. So investors should treat them as foundational, but not the only part of their portfolio. Let's keep things moving and answer another caller question. Oh, just kidding. We got a live call. Let's go to Thomas in Santa Cruz. Got a question about silver and gold?
Yeah, silver and gold. I'm sure you're eventually going to get tired of answering questions about silver and gold, but I'll try to say this as straightforward as possible. Basically, I've heard a lot of people talking about the relationship between silver and gold and that it's been getting more out of whack, being that the silver ratio to the price of gold is historically lower than the average. Basically, I'm asking what you guys think about that in terms of like a medium hold on or buy and hold on silver compared to gold. Gold has become a huge part of my portfolio. I'm 28 years old. I bought a bunch of GDX and I don't really want to sell it even though I'm up handedly. But I'm still very interested in this relationship between silver and gold. And I wanted to just see where your guys' heads are at with even in addition to the gold play, adding silver for more of like a medium term for that price relationship to go back to averages.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? In the recent past, we've seen the gold to silver ratio being at a historically high level. And that means that the price of gold has grown pretty significantly relative to the price of silver. Earlier in the year, I think it was at about 100-1 at some point. It might be getting close to that again, given the recent trends in gold. More recently, I think it's closer to maybe 85-90. But, you know, historically, what you've seen is it being in about the 50-60 range. Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board as demand for dollars falls, the dollar is weakening. While at the same time, silver is rising a bit, but its upside has lagged gold because you have to realize what silver's primary use is for, right? Silver has far more of an industrial demand than gold does. And so when you're talking about what's been driving the market price of these two things, there is market structure in effect here as well. Not just because the demand is associated with the fear going on in the market, the safe haven status, or wanting to get away from the dollar, but because if you have to choose between these two metals, which yes, silver tends to move, it tends to lag behind gold, but move in the same direction as well. Well, in the market that we live in today, gold ETFs, gold funds, there are far more of them. They're far more liquid. They can handle those large flows. Industrial demand has been down a bit over the past year or so with respect to its comparison to the demand for gold. So there's really just a lot going on here from both a macro perspective, what's driving the demand, and a market structure perspective, what investors can buy into that has made this ratio expand even more. That being said, when the industrial activity does pick up, silver can be a great thing to buy. Thanks for the call. Headed into new breaks, still to come. More talking points and more answers to your questions here on InvestTalk.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Duncan from New York, and just giving a quick phone call because I have a question about a cryptocurrency idea that I just recognized. I have a Fidelity brokerage right now, and I am investing in EZBC. because in the past, that was the only way for me to invest in Bitcoin. But now Fidelity just recently just gave the ability to invest purely in Bitcoin through the Roth. So I'm now just investing in Bitcoin. But what should I do with this EZBC? Should I still keep it or should I just sell it and just invest solely on Bitcoin? Because I think this ETF has some charges or something like that, like every other ETF, right? So I'm just kind of curious. I just want to consolidate and I really appreciate the help. Thank you very much. Bye.
EZBC is the Franklin Bitcoin ETF. It was launched by Franklin Templeton Digital Holdings Trust. And what it tries to do is track the performance of Bitcoin versus the CME-CF Bitcoin reference rate before expenses. Okay. And so if you have the ability to hold Bitcoin itself within your Roth, is I think what you said, then certainly it makes absolutely no sense to pay this company 29 basis points to hold it for you. Now, that being said, I don't know much about what you are talking about with Fidelity's new ability to do this. So I would check to see that it is actually not more expensive than 29 basis points. But the goal of any of these funds is to mimic the return of Bitcoin before fees. So if you have a way to do it without fees, that's the way to go. Thanks for the call. Let's keep things moving and play two in a row at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Andrew from Atlanta. I'm trying to reach Justin or Luke. Trying to look for your analysis on the ticker symbol APA. That's APA Corporation. It is its subsidiaries explores for, develops, and produces natural gas, crude oil, and natural gas liquids. Where do you think this stock is going? I've been holding it for a second, and if I wanted to try and purchase more of it, what do you think is a good price? I'll listen for your answer on the show. Thank you.
APA Corporation, ticker APA, is an independent energy company, and they're focusing, like the caller said, on crude oil, natural gas, and natural gas liquids. They do a bit of exploration and appraisal as well, but they shifted towards more of a lean focused portfolio, divesting from their non-core assets, which is something that I always like to see, reducing costs and overall just trying to spend a bit less money. Now, in terms of size, it's this $8.7 billion market cap company, and it's got about $6.2 billion in debt as of the end of 2024. Its revenue growth has been tied to the price of the underlying products here because they peaked out in 2022 and it slipped down to $8.2 billion from $11 billion in 2023, back up to $9.7 billion in 2024, back down to $9.2 billion this year. Same time, margins really fell off of a cliff from 34% net margin in 2023 to 13.9% net margin in 2025. Now, you know, over the past 6 months or so, relative strength has upgraded a little bit. It was really weak for quite some time, especially after 2023. They've had a couple acquisitions, the layoffs and restructuring, and the comparative performance versus their peers has actually gotten a bit better, I would say, since about May, right? Now, year to date, they're about flat compared to the industry, down 5 basis points relative to the industry. But in the past 3 months, up 36.74%. Now, what do you really want to look here is something that concerns me still, which is the level of debt they have on their balance sheet. $6.2 billion on a $8.7 billion market cap company doesn't seem to be a very overall healthy balance sheet to me. Their dividend also is sitting around 4%, nothing too crazy, but definitely higher than it was in those years where it was very profitable, meaning that they're probably not adjusting their dividend that much from time to time. Now, from a technical perspective, like I said, it is getting a bit better. I wouldn't say that necessarily it's in a breakout right now, but given how far it fell, it makes sense that it might be outperforming a little bit relative to its industry overall. I just want to pull up one other thing here so I can take a look at its payout ratio. While that's loading, let's look at the valuation. Forward-looking price earnings 7.5 times, a little bit below its average. Price to book 1.5 times, price to cash flow 1.9 times. It's all sitting near or below its five-year average. Yeah, that payout ratio is 43, so it doesn't really stand in a spot where it might be cutting back its dividend just yet. I don't know. It's been in a breakout a bit since April, but still hasn't breached its early 2025 highs. I think all oil and natural gas companies stand to benefit a little bit from what is going on currently in the Middle East, what is going on in Europe, rising tensions, and as we head into next year, a resurgence of demand. So I think that, generally speaking, the prices that we saw in energy were bargains. For APA, though, I'm a bit worried about their balance sheet. That is APA Corporation, ticker APA. Now, warning lights are flashing a bit across the U.S. auto sector, signaling some broader economic stress. That's because automakers' profits are being squeezed a bit by tariffs, while consumers, especially those with solid credit, they're pulling back. Now, CarMax, the nation's largest used car retailer, reported a steep drop in sales and profit, and that sent the stock down about 20%. Their CEO said even higher credit buyers are sitting on the sidelines, highlighting growing consumer angst or possibly even just the thoughts that down the road rates will be a bit lower. Either way, both of those things can stop consumer spending just a bit. Ford is offering lower interest rates to some prime buyers to move unsold F-150 pickups, while Honda scrapped an electric Acura SUV after just 1 year. Automakers, they're piling on the discounts for EVs ahead of a federal tax credit expiration, distorting short-term demand. Now, one of the best ways to look at the auto industry is to look at auto lenders. Tricolor, a subprime auto lender with 65 dealerships, filed for bankruptcy liquidation amid fraud allegations and overall deepening sector turmoil. First Brands, a major auto parts supplier with $6 billion in debt, is preparing for bankruptcy protection. CarMax's lending arm, they've also taken hit. Loans from 2022 and 2023 soured and provisions for losses climbed, prompting about $150 million in cost cuts. At the same time, EV sales, although they're projected to jump 28% year over year in September, that may not last, given, as I mentioned, tax credits going away. Gas and hybrid sales, at the same time, forecast to fall 2.5%. showing the uneven demand across the board. Here's what's really hurting the auto industry. High vehicle prices, elevated rates, everyday inflation, they're all straining shoppers despite modest tariff relief from trade deals. Industry giants across the board are cutting, citing geopolitical uncertainty and tariffs, underscoring how global pressures are weighing on autos. And when you start to see consumers cracking a bit in this space, it's a warning sign that you should not ignore. This is InvestTalk. Our phone lines, well, they never close. So let's get to our question now.
Hello, Justin and Luke. Chris from New York. I want to get your analysis on MasterCard and Visa. I currently own both of them in my portfolio, roughly a 2% position of each. I was looking to add to them. It looks like they've been going horizontal for the past few months. I know they've always kind of traded fairly high compared to the market in the 30s. I want to get your thoughts on that, if it's a good time to add now or there's a better price target you would look to be adding. Thank you again, and I'll be listening to your answer on the podcast. Bye.
MasterCard and Visa, two blue chip stocks, are household names, certainly, and dominant players in the global payment processing space. They're both fairly large companies. MasterCard is a Visa is a $661 billion dollar market cap company. MasterCard is a $517 billion market cap company, and their returns have been relatively similar over the past year. Visa up 24.22% over the past 52 weeks. MasterCard up 15.91% over the past 52 weeks. Year to date, MasterCard's up 7.73. Visa is up 5.96. Now, both of these names trade at relatively high multiples. Visa, 26.4 times forward-looking earnings. MasterCard, as soon as this loads, I'll be able to tell you. 31.1 times forward-looking earnings. Revenue growing, though, pretty significantly. 10% for MasterCard on an annualized basis. 9.4% for Visa on an annualized basis. Now, here's the thing. They have had a stranglehold on the industry for quite some time. But it doesn't mean that they always will. The brand And network has a pretty strong moat. I don't see other types of payment processors, fintech or payment processing companies coming in and stealing much market share here. But there are margin pressures from fee regulation. There is cybersecurity fraud and data risk across the board. There are macro and consumer spending cycles. There's regulatory risk, legal risk. The DOJ suit is suing Visa and international regulatory industries, institutions are suing them as well. And that could lead to penalties and force structural changes. There's also the threat of new technologies, digital currency. Now, that being said, I think one of the biggest issues is Visa, MasterCard, all of these credit card companies, they provide rewards to consumers. And so although businesses would like to use digital payment processing because they don't want to pay the fees to Visa and MasterCard, you also have to get a benefit for the consumers there as well. Because of that, I don't think things are going to change dramatically in a way that these lose a lot of market share in payment processing broadly. But still, it seems a bit expensive to me, and in fact, above the five-year average on both accounts. That is Visa and MasterCard. I think 2% in each is just enough. Thanks for the call. We got plenty of time, so let's drop another question now.
Thank you so much for all the help you guys do for us. I had a quick question. I've been looking at this stock for quite some time. It's JSN James, X as in X-ray, and as in Nancy. I would like to know an entry point, like your analysis on JXN. Thank you so much.
JXN is Jackson Financial. It is a firm that primarily operates in the annuities, the insurance, the retirement, the income space through Jackson National Life. So it offers fixed index variable annuities and related retirement products. It also maintains a huge legacy block of insurance and annuity businesses. Over the past 52 weeks, it's up 13.97%. Year-to-date, up 17.33%. Over the past 3 months, up 18.02%. Net interest earned, growing at a decent clip. 2023, grew at 11.4%, though it did dip a little bit after last year. Net income, though, hasn't been as strong as it was in 2021 and 2022, but headed back in the right direction yet again. Forward-looking price to earnings does look cheap, but relative to where it's been over the past 5 years, it is well above its five-year average. They did have a $1 billion increase in share repurchases in September. Certainly, that should continue to float the stock at least a little bit, but they have had a bit of weakness from their recent quarterly report and from a technical momentum standpoint. Relative strength compared to the S&P 500 dipping off a little bit over the past couple months. As you've seen, many people start to reassess the value of this company, but also a target price such that it has a consensus hold rating at the moment. Now, what's really going to affect this is how well executed are these buybacks? How does capital allocation work going forward? Is earnings going to recover? Will revenue start to grow like it was before? Could you have a bit of a technical breakout if it can break out above the 115 level, which does stand yet to be seen? And there's just a bit of a valuation gap as well between it and its peers. And then there's also the macro side of this, right? You have the annuity market dynamics. You have interest rates. As a company that is in the annuity fixed income insurance space, how will shifts in interest rates and a regulatory environment, mortality and longevity assumptions within their books, how's that all going to affect returns of this company? And so, given where its valuations stand, given where a lot of its reports have been, its quarterly reports, past two quarterly reports, given that growth hasn't really picked back up to where it was coming out of the pandemic and where its valuation is, I think that for this $7.2 billion market cap company, seems a little bit overpriced to me at the moment. That is Jackson Financial Incorporation, ticker JXN. Now, we do always talk about various topics, and we do hope to inform you as the listener. But if you feel as though you need a little bit of personal advice, a little bit of personal touch, Justin and I would love to speak with you. Each and every day, we talk to listeners just like yourself who are worried that they're not properly taking into account all the things they need to in order to build for their financial future. So if you'd like to have a free consultation, no commitment. It's free. It's confidential. Head over to InvestTalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. Justin and I can't wait to speak with you. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Greer. We have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Join Justin and Luke as they talk about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, September 30th, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Online seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
I was hoping to get your opinion on ticker symbol RGR, Sturm Ruger. I own this company for about 2 years now. I was wondering if you think you would appreciate it or if it's time to sell. Thank you. Bye.
Ticker RGR is Sturm, Ruger & Company. They design, manufacture, and sell firearms to domestic customers, meaning 100% of their revenue comes from the United States. Now, you've held it for 2 years. It's been a rough 2 years. Down 10.2% in 2023, down 22.2% in 2024. Year-to-date, it's had a bit of a resurgence, bolstered by the past 3 months, 17.52% positive in the past couple months. They've had a bit of acquisitions. They've done some restructuring, but the results have overall still been pretty poor. It's a $709 million market cap company. It's very tiny, but it doesn't have much debt, $1.7 million. It also doesn't have much growth at all. It peaked out in December of 2021. When people are scared, they tend to buy firearms. $730.7 million in revenue, all the way down to $534.3 million this year. I think one of the issues is, relative to its industry, it's also underperformed pretty dramatically, with the exception of this year. It underperformed by 22.6% in 2023 and 22.8% in 2024. And oh, by the way, it's trading at 26.1 times forward-looking earnings, with five-year high of 26.8. So seems to be a company that's perennially underperforming and it's pretty darn expensive. I'd probably move on from Sturm, Ruger & Company, ticker RGR. All right, last thing I want to talk about before we head off for the day is about utilities, because utility bills have surged, rising 31% over 4 years versus 19% for overall inflation. And so naturally that starts to draw some political scrutiny. Rising demand from data centers, costly grid updates, and replacing coal plants are fueling a lot of this increase. Inflation and inputs like steel and labor further add to the burden, and that hits customers, and it attracts regulators' attention. Indiana's governor recently appointed a commissioner to review utility profits, saying investors should shoulder more of the costs. Candidates in New Jersey's governor's race are campaigning on high bills, while New York and Rhode Island propose capping utility returns on equities at 4%, far below the 10% historical average. Deregulated operators like Vistra and Constellation can really benefit from these higher prices because of the profit motive that is included in their business, but most utilities are highly regulated, and so they face far tighter oversight on spending and therefore also on returns. Now, return on equity make up about 15 to 20% of bills, and regulators under political pressure may cut them as a quick fix. Political focus on utilities hasn't really been this intense since, the late 80s, when inflation and high rates and grid investment really started to collide like it is now. If you look at the spread of utility returns over treasuries, it's narrowed. It's narrowed to 5 percentage points. It's its lowest level since 1999. And that's done a lot to tighten profitability margins. Some analysts argue profit-cutting proposals are mostly political theater, but others warn investors not to dismiss the risk. Despite the sector's staid reputation, AI-driven power demand has fueled a 14% stock rally this year. 14%. In an industry, in a sector that is traditionally just used for income as a bond proxy. These are some crazy returns relative to what you generally see. And that's pushed valuations up far, well above the long-term averages. So here's the paradox. Utilities are facing booming demand and $1 trillion in planned grid investment. And you would see that and think to yourself, man, I got to get in here. But rising bills means that you as a utility investor may have to bear more of the heat than the reward. That concludes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for joining us and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, please leave us a rate and review. We both really appreciate that. And don't forget to tell at least one person that you know about this program. Also, today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's all really working together. We would love to talk to you. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to your financial life. If that sounds interesting, or if you want to sign up for our webinar on September 30th, head over to investtalk.com, click on the webinar button or the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.